Welcome to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Decker. This podcast is dedicated to providing my books in full, unabridged audio format. Look for new episodes every Tuesday. Now, on with the show. Hello and welcome back to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. This week we are continuing to read Blood Games. Last week we read, "The police officer got out of the car. Hands where I can see them," he motioned with his hand. "Drop the bag." And now, episode 3. It seemed as though an eternity passed while I considered how to respond to the cop's order, but it was not more than a second or two. I wouldn't say I had become used to walking past police officers, but my disguises had allowed me to do that multiple times. Part of my hesitation was because I was surprised he had stopped me. He had his hand on his holstered pistol, but had not yet removed it. Perhaps he did not have a reason to suspect me and was just being cautious. I dropped my bag and raised my hands. My heartbeat thudded inside my chest and sweat trickled down the small of my back, but I thought I was doing a skillful job of keeping it all from reflecting on my face. "What's wrong, officer?" I allowed a little bit of my alarm to creep into my voice, but stamped down the rest. A regular citizen in this situation would be concerned, but he had not pulled a gun or made any accusations. "Is everything okay?" I nodded to the bag. "Please feel free to look inside. I've got nothing to hide, just headed home from work." Nothing but my disguises, pistols, a grenade, and the ammo to go with it, I thought. If the cop did decide to go through it, I would have to respond quickly. Even with my newly found boundaries, I was not going to hurt innocent people. If I couldn't hold myself to that, then I was no better than Peck or Reed. "Can you remove your sunglasses?" he asked. I did and gave him a weak smile, trying to look non-threatening. Goofy, even. He shook his head. "Okay, you can go." I had expected him to take my picture and submit it to FaceRec. "You don't want to look in my bag." I made no move to pick it up, making sure to sell it. "Negative. Be careful. We have a known terrorist in the area. You see anything suspicious, give us a call." He left before I could respond. I allowed a small smile to creep onto my face as he disappeared into the park. The makeup may have been a pain, but this made it all worth it. As soon as I could, I would duck into another restroom and make a few subtle changes to my face. I wore a long-sleeve shirt, so if I took off my jacket, I would not look out of place in the cold. Wanting nothing more than to run, I forced myself down to a fast walk. The officer had said a terrorist was in the area, so a quick pace away was what an average person would do. I snorted. An average person would run, but I didn't want to risk that. The street was clear, so I crossed. I had just stepped out onto the curb when several black Suburbans came around the corner and screeched to a halt about 50 feet back. The windows were tinted and the plates were not government. Diagon or Data Raider? Probably Data Raider. I listened for a drone but did not hear a buzzing sound. Perhaps one of the teams in the car were running one and that was how they had found me. Or maybe somebody had snapped a picture of me and submitted it with FaceRec. Cursing under my breath, I looked at the Suburbans, hoping they did not have a camera on me. I was screwed if they did. All four doors of the first Suburban opened. I was tempted to fish out my grenade and toss it their way. Instead, I cocked my head to the side, trying to look like a curious bystander. Two women and two men had gotten out of the vehicle. The driver was a stocky fellow who was at least a foot shorter than me, but a few inches wider. He looked my way but did not stare. Several of the women did as well, but my disguise appeared to be getting me through their scrutiny because none of them gave me a second look. I sauntered away, thinking luck was with me. First a cop and now a security team that was from Data Raider, though I wasn't going to make that leap without further information. Perhaps FaceRec's algorithms were not all they were cracked up to be, or maybe the lighting was bad. Whatever it was, I was glad to take advantage of it. While it had been a good idea to rest in the park, to put together my composure, taking Chris's call had been a mistake. That was doubtless how they had found me. Diagon couldn't be installing microphones all over the city, could they? Now that was a paranoid thought. I was at the corner when I heard running feet and looked over my shoulder. The team from the Suburban was coming my way. I took the corner at a run while reaching into my bag. I refrained from pulling out my pistol until I had passed by a woman and her son, remembering a time when I had done that exact thing and had scared a man. I could still remember Shannon's look as she had glared at me. I missed working with her. Part of me hoped I would be able to convince her to join me once I exposed Peck, but I did not think it likely. She had dug in too much, and it would be difficult for her to admit she was wrong, even after all of that. Once I had my pistol out, I slung my bag over my shoulder and ran full out. People got out of my way, some pointing to my gun while others pointed at those who charged me. A woman screamed, but I did not turn to see what it was about, figuring it was just a response to me. The end of the block came fast, and I looked both ways before darting out into traffic. I did not have a walk signal, but didn't like how close the people were behind me. A driver slammed her brakes and honked her horn, but I didn't even look at her. From my peripheral vision, I was able to see I was in no danger. A car came from the opposite direction, intending to turn the corner, but swerved to a stop. The man inside gave me the finger as I hopped onto the curb and sped away. I assumed he had not seen my pistol, otherwise he might not have given me the offensive gesture. A few seconds later, there was more honking as those behind followed after me. I glanced back. The number of people on foot was down to 3. The stocky driver had fallen behind. Gasping for breath, my lungs on fire, I pushed myself harder. Another glance back, and I saw that one of my pursuers had broken from the others and was gaining on me. A tall blonde woman, who I at first mistook for Shannon, but realized was somebody else. I pushed even harder. My thighs burned, my head spun, my lungs felt like they were closing. Still, I continued to work my legs. "Stop," she cried, "or I will shoot you." Grabbing onto a lamppost, I spun and ran down an intersecting sidewalk, weaving in and out of people as I did. It was a bluff on her part. There were too many people to risk a shot. She swore, her footsteps were right behind me. The turn had not fazed her at all. Her breathing was far less labored than mine. A man with a jogging stroller came out in front of me, and without realizing what I was doing, I jumped, barely clearing his child's head. "Watch out," the man screamed. I did not stop, but cringed as I imagined the woman careening into the kid. I did not hear anything to indicate that there had been a collision. When I checked, the woman was behind me, and the stroller was undisturbed. A black SUV pulled up in front of me just as I was about to once again run into oncoming traffic. I almost lost my balance but caught it at the last moment by pushing off the hood of a parked delivery van. "Stop!" It was not the woman who was chasing me who called out. It was somebody else. I kept running and did not realize it was Chris until I had gone too far to double back. What was she doing here? I had just got off the phone with her, and she'd given me the impression she was back in her office. Had she used my smartphone to track me? I might have to ditch it altogether and rely on burners from here on out. It was a convenience I might not be able to afford any longer. I should have given Chris a burner phone number. Of course, if she was going to offer me a way out of this, "You're not going to get away," called the blonde woman. Not bothering to answer, I ducked out into the street, forcing a minivan to screech to a halt. I wished they would not have bothered. I had timed it to cut off my pursuer. As cavalier as the woman had been in chasing me, she was more cautious following me out to the road. I waited half a second for several cars to pass before pushing further into the traffic. I had not realized the road held 6 lanes, 3 in either direction. It felt like a video game with a frog that I'd played as a kid. I cut across the next 2 lanes without a problem and reached the median. Blondie was still 2 lanes back, standing right on the dashed lines as cars sped by on either side of her. She glared at me as somebody laid on their horn. The 3 lanes of traffic I had yet to cross were busy, and I had no opportunity to get away. Not wanting to remain still, I ran down the median. Cars whizzing by on either side. A black Suburban headed towards me, and it looked as though it was preparing to stop. I had nowhere to run. I kept looking for a break in the traffic, but none came. The driver's window was down, and I could see the same man who'd looked right at me before. He had a sneer on his face. The man beside him had a gun that was pointed at me through the windshield. I reversed and ran smack into Blondie. She clotheslined me, sending me down to the ground. She stepped on my gun hand and kicked my pistol into the street. She was covered in sweat but smiled. "Not so fast, are you?" She was attractive, not as good-looking as Shannon, but she could hold her own. I leaped to my feet, grabbed her shoulders, and tossed her out into traffic while pulling her pistol from her hands. It was a Sig Sauer, but that was all I had time to see. Lucky for her, she landed in front of the black Suburban that had already been rolling to a halt. The bumper came within inches of hitting her head. I ran down the median, looking for a way out. There was a break in traffic on the side I had come from, so I ran into the road and made it across without having to stop. People on the sidewalk had stopped to watch, making it easier to navigate around them. I heard footsteps behind me again and groaned when I saw that Blondie had made it across as well. Her face was red, she was pushing harder than before, and did not look the least bit winded. I darted down an alley, planning to confront her, but a car was coming at me fast, and I was forced to turn and run back out. It did not look like they had anything to do with my pursuers or Chris. My move caught Blondie by surprise, so I pushed her out of the way before I realized what I was doing. She slammed into a big man who kept her from falling. "What you doing, fool?" he demanded, shaking a fist at me. "You don't treat women like that." I would have done the same thing in his position. Without answering, I sped off with Blondie close on my heels. He yelled after us, but his girth made it impossible for him to follow. I came to another valley and this time made sure the way was clear before I turned in. As we ran, I pulled down a garbage can and kicked over a stack of pallets. She hopped over the can and climbed the pallets. She miscalculated while on top and lost her balance, letting me get a 3-second advantage on her. At the end of the alley, I flipped around, grabbed and shoved her up against the wall. "Why are you following me?" I took a deep breath and coughed up a wad of spit. "Who are you?" She scowled and kicked me between the legs. Pain shot through my lower abdomen. I managed to keep hold of her shoulders for a second, then she twisted free and elbowed me in the back. I grabbed her waist and threw her to the asphalt, coming down on her back with my knee. "Digon or Data Raider?" I asked. She did not answer and struggled to get free. I grabbed her arms and pulled them behind her back, maneuvering, so I held both in one hand. Using my other hand, I pushed her head on into the asphalt. "Digon or Data Raider?" I hated the thought of marring her beauty, so when she did not answer, I let go of her head. It would have been a different matter if it had been a man. She snorted. It was a guttural sound that was punctuated with my own gasping for breath. She was not having any trouble breathing. "Our file has you pegged," she said. "Might as well just let me up. I know you're not going to hurt me." I felt my ears redden. I wanted to lash out and prove she was wrong, but I could not bring myself to do it. Killing Sam had been one thing. He had shot a cop and had been party to bombs that had killed others. I did not know a thing about her. "I thought I might have been wrong when you threw me into the oncoming traffic," she said. "But then I realized you'd thrown me in front of my own team." I had realized that after the fact, but did not see the point in telling her. "Digon or Data Raider?" I asked. She did not answer. I looked up as a Suburban pulled into the alley. It rolled to a stop before the pallets and the doors opened. Cursing, I pulled Blondie to her feet and out of the alley. It was no easy task as she went limp while hammering me with her fists. I remembered doing that with my adoptive parents when they had tried to take me somewhere I did not want to go. The memory blackened my mood. Once we were clear of the alley, I debated what to do. "Come on, Jake," she said. "Hit me." She moved as if she were going to kick me again, but I turned my hip and she got me in the thigh. It still hurt, but it was far less pain than before. A car screeched to a halt and I released her, ready to run again when Chris called out, "Get in the car." Blondie had not moved, but when I went to grab her, she knocked away my hands and headbutted me in the chest. I ducked to avoid a punch and elbowed her in the stomach, causing her to fall on her butt. "Go with her, Jake," Blondie said. "Reed has said this is your last offer. He made me a promise to make it one more time." "Tell Reed he'll soon be joining Sam," I said. "I'll send you there too." She smiled without mirth. "Why do you think he sent me?" "You don't hurt women. You won't have the guts to do to me what you did to Sam." I did not know what to say, but I was not certain she was right. 2 weeks ago, that would have been an accurate statement about me. Today, not as much. In dealing with Sam, I had embraced something new. Something I had not done before. A new perspective. And while Sister Bautista would no doubt have thought I was facing the wrong spectrum, it suited me to be where I was. I had more options in dealing with men like Peck and Reed. I did not answer as Chris opened the rear passenger door and I jumped in beside her. The door was not even shut before we were already speeding away. Blondie was on her feet by then. The people from the Suburban exited the alley and the stocky driver brought up a pistol, but Blondie pulled down his arm. Chris smiled at me. You owe me one, and guess what? I'm going to decide how you pay me back. She paused for dramatic effect. You are going to meet my boss, Jake. That's it for this week. I hope you have enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for another installment of the Dan Decker Books Podcast. One last thing before you go. Sign up for my newsletter at dandeckerbooks.com, and you will receive a free ebook copy of War of the Fathers. The text, audio, and music for this show are all copyrighted by Dan Decker. All rights reserved. This podcast is published by Xander Revolutions, LLC.